From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.
Hello, this is Jack Gilbert, the editor of NMA, and welcome to the special edition of The Advice Show, in which we're going to release the full recording from my conversation with Mark Fitzpatrick, the recently installed CEO of St. James's Place, in which we discuss everything from SJP's new fee structure to culture and advisor loans. Hope you enjoy it.
So Mark, it's been 18 months since you took on this job, quite a big job, obviously the biggest wealth management business in the UK. And during that time, you must have got to know the partnership, the SJP advisors, the practice firms and their staff pretty well, I'm guessing. What have you learned from SJP's advisors so far?
Oh, I've learned a huge amount from the advisors. I've tried to travel around a lot of the country. On Friday, I was up in the Midlands meeting a partner and his wife and their team. And each practice within the St. James's Place partnership operates slightly differently. The client segments they focus on differ. The way they operate differ. We've clearly set guardrails and tracks for them in terms of what they need to do around the quality of advice and various other things. But what's been astounding is the quality of relationships that they have. So one of my senior executives, she's been a client of St. James's Place for 30 years. No, I lie, 27 years, with the same advisor throughout that time. So outside of somebody's family members, who's in your life for 23? It's remarkable in that regard. And listening to some of the stories that the advisors tell of where they've made a real difference. So, for example, there was one where a new widower had lost her partner. The widow needed some help around finding a new car. And she was nervous she was going to get ripped off. So she asked the partner for some help and guidance, and he went around and spent a few weekends going around different showrooms around that city, helping her find the right car that would suit her and make sure that she didn't get ripped off and that she was well supported through that journey. Or another one where, this is from the guys up in the Midlands last week, where a couple of years ago he was helping an elderly client. And she asked him to move into a different room because the bulbs had gone. And she said, look, smoke alarms all need to be fixed or whatever. A couple of hours later, he came back with bulbs, replaced her bulbs, put batteries in the smoke alarms and all that kind of stuff. Didn't think anything of it. She'd been a client for a long time, but still a great client. But a kind of 18, 24 months later, her son-in-law picked up the phone and said, you helped my mother-in-law. I'm just selling my business. I'm going to need some help and some advice. So he now has a whole range of new clients off the back of that. So what really strikes me is how personal the connection is. And that's something I think that often gets lost.
Yeah.
It's not just about a cost of advice and the pounds and the pence or the investment return. It's about the peace of mind. It's about the trust. It's about the confidence. And in my case, I've been a client for a number of years now. It's the confidence my family get from knowing there's somebody there who's coordinated everything. So my advisor meets with my lawyer and my tax accountant, making sure everything's coordinated, everything's ready for when I retire or if I get hit by bus number 23, there's somebody there to be able to help and shepherd it all the way through. So there's a peace of mind. There's also knowledge that you're doing what you should be doing, but probably time poor. And that's the key thing I think the advisors are phenomenal with. So I've been so impressed at the caliber, the quality of the advisors, and the essence, the quality of their interconnection and their relationship with their clients.
I mean, that relation point is really interesting, and I think I look at something on your bio, Mark, on the SJP website, which says that you brought a fresh perspective on the importance and value of financial advice in nurturing people's personal and financial well-being. So what's the value of financial planning to you, do you think?
So to me, and one of the things we're trying to do across St. James's Place is make it real for clients in terms of what it is that they are getting. So whether it is peace of mind, whether it is trust, whether it's just getting your assets working in a way that they should do. I saw some research last week that said 40% of people who are invested in cash ISAs are doing it for retirement planning. Now, you'd never be in a cash ISA for a retirement planning element. There are far more effective ways to be able to do that. So encouraging people to sweat their money, sweat their savings hard. People work hard for their money. They should get their money to work hard for them. And having the confidence to do that, knowing somebody's supporting you, somebody's encouraging you to do the right thing, and somebody's giving you the confidence in terms of the planning and the ambitions that you might set out. All of those to me are so, so important. Getting the cash flow planning and being able to look forward the next 20, 30, 40 years, see what's going to happen potentially in your life, when you can afford to retire, what kind of lifespan and what kind of life choices you will be able to afford to make. How might you be able to support your kids? How regularly might you go on holiday? What kind of holiday? When you get on the plane, do you turn left or do you turn right? And how far right? All of these things the advisor can help support. And probably the final piece as well, because I know this is something the regulator's been talking about vulnerable clients.
Mm.
One of the things I found as an outsider coming to the UK, there are two things people in the UK don't like talking about. One is money and one is death. And we're all going to die at some stage. So helping people support their parents in the latter stages, understanding how expensive final stage support care can be. So we're working with some great people in the industry, supporting us, building our capabilities around vulnerable clients so that our advisors are well-equipped, our clients are well-equipped, so they're having full 360-degree conversations with their parents, between husband and wife or partners, and with their kids to really help explain the whole thing, to bring it alive in a very different way. And that doesn't come alive in a piece of paper or an FCA regulation. That's the real world. And having an advisor in the middle of that, that really energizes the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's one of the huge benefits that advisors bring, and inheritance tax and vulnerable clients and these kind of things are such the value add that the advisors offer. And you talk about the regulator there, but I guess one of the tragedies of the piece is the fact there's only 8% of UK adults are receiving an ongoing advice service at the moment. I mean, do you think the FCA should be doing more to encourage, to improve that number and get that percentage higher?
So there's a lot, I think, that all of us need to play. Everybody in the industry needs to do. Every advice professional, I think, has a role to play in terms of how they grow, but also how they bring new people in to the profession. So our St. James's Place Academy is something we are immensely proud of. And it was one of the things I hadn't appreciated before I came in.
You called it the crown, just the crown jewels of your business.
It is one of the jewels in the crown, in the SJP crown. It is a part of our business where we now have younger folk coming in. The average age of the advisor in the UK is what, mid-50s or thereabouts?
About 58 or something.
58. The average age of a St. James's Place advisor is about 46. The average age of somebody coming through the academy is in the mid-30s. And one of the other things I'm so proud of is a third of our folk in the academy today are women. Because more and more women in society are controlling the purse strings, owning, developing, got very, very impressive salaries and financial affairs that need support, giving them more choice about who they go to, whether it's a man, woman, etc., opens that up. And I think we need to address that because the industry itself is, I think, only about 16% female across the industry. So I think there's more all of us need to do. The regulator government is spending a lot of time with the advice guidance boundary review. I think that will continue to be an important part of it, but also allowing a bit more flexibility in the real world around ongoing advice and what that really means, and not adopting a cookie cutter, it has to be this or it has to be that. So we're going to look to work hard with the regulator, with PIMFA and others, in terms of how we shape what ongoing advice should look like, but also what the advice guidance boundary review targeted support, which is likely to be the first piece. What that really does, how that supports, how that provides an on-ramp for consumers into getting some help, because there's so much money sitting around in bank accounts not being worked.
Would you look at offering targeted support as and when it comes out?
So I think we want to see how it comes out,
yeah,
and the narrative around it. So there's still quite a lot of work to be done around that. There is also a very important role for the FOS. And I'm at pains to say to both the FCA and Treasury, FOS have to be at this table, because if people feel that their stance around advice guidance boundary and targeted support may be amended, may be adjusted, may be scrutinized after the event, it's going to kill it before it even starts. So you need all the right players at the table. In the right guise, I can see us actually providing some real support for our advisors. Some of our advisors have said they'd like to be able to have the option of providing some targeted support for people they meet who may not actually have the wherewithal to warrant or need full fat advice, but targeted support might be an initial conversation, initial support for them.
They could be kind of in their mid-30s or something, building pension.
Or even younger. We've got more and more clients are in their early mid-30s, etc., rather than always being the perception of it's somebody in the retirement phase.
Interesting. So, Mark, if we look at the business that you've come into, obviously a lot of your predecessors have come internally within St. James's Place. They've been there for many years and they've been hired up to the CEO role. You've come outside the business. I think your last main job was the interim CEO of Prudential. Does your appointment kind of merit a change in direction for the SJP business?
I think what it does is the board was keen to have somebody from outside come in to run SJP. So many of the previous CEOs have been internal, and it's useful to be able to bring some external blood, some fresh perspectives. What I've inherited is a business that is phenomenally successful, does things by and large incredibly well, makes a real difference for, you know, a million clients.
A million clients.
It's north of a million clients. So as an advisor said to me shortly after I arrived, actually a million clients can't be wrong. Do we get everything right all of the time? No, we don't. But a million clients is just of a size and a scale. And that number is growing. That number grew throughout last year, despite some of the challenges that we had. So before I started, I did a little bit of homework and scribbled down on a piece of paper, which I've still got at home, actually, setting out some key areas I wanted to look at. One was around fees, and we've made and making good progress around that. So over the summer, we should go live on that. The other element is around reputation, because I was concerned about the reputation. So we spent, for the first time ever during the course of last year, above the line advertising, we spent a lot more time doing primary research in terms of the value of advice, what it means and how it can support.
There was the value of advice campaign.
Correct.
Was on during the Six Nations.
Correct. Efforts. There was, yeah. There was also an element of providing people with more interaction with the media. So the first quarter of this year, we had over 3,000 articles where St. James's Place was mentioned. 99% of those are positive or neutral. Mm-hmm. So we need to continue investing in that. We need to continue telling the story rather than it being told for us. And the third element I wanted to spend some time looking at was around the culture. And the fourth area was around the costs. And around the culture and costs, that was the genesis behind the new or refreshed strategy that we launched last year. That's talking about the four kind of key pillars, the areas we're looking to grow the business, but also some of the cost reductions we're looking to bring about, with the lens that over half of the costs that we save between now and 2030 will be reinvested back into the business. So that's over £250 million will be reinvested back into the business, not buying businesses, but making the client experience, the partner experience, and the employee experience all better. And we think that puts us in the category of one in the industry that's got that kind of firepower to invest in systems, processes, kit, and the like to make it easier for clients, partners, and employees all to do their job better.
Mm. Just on the culture point, Mark, did you think that the business need and some of the practice firms needed to change their culture?
I think it's more an element of through coming in and looking at what St. James's Place was and what St. James's Place could be, emphasizing again the importance of that client-partner relationship, really making sure we understood what was it that clients needed, and therefore making sure we've got the right product range across the patch on that particular piece, and also ensuring then that we make it easier for clients to be able to interact.
Mm.
So there were all those type of components, and in so doing, trying to simplify elements of the business so that it all comes down to the essence of the purpose and the essence of being able to execute per that purpose and per the ultimate strategy. We started a very strong place because we have 95% client retention.
Mm.
So it's an element of finding the right things to adjust and to tweak, because the essence, as we started off at the beginning of this conversation, is one of great advisors doing great work with clients, really changing and impacting their lives. And what we want to be able to do is put that on steroids across more clients to make advice more accessible and have a wider range of products so that clients can actually not have to worry about all the different pots of where their money is. It's together so somebody can look after it and really help them in what they do.
But I mean, on the culture point, there are certain things you have done, haven't you, since you came in? Because I think there was a story in the FT a few months ago that you were dropping a advisor partner day in Glen Eagles and things, and there was changes to the O2 advisor conference was going to go virtual.
So what we've looked to do with the events is try and make them a little smaller, because when you have, so I think I was a few weeks in and presented at the O2, and it was what I think 6,000-7,000 people there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people, and it's partners, advisors, some of their support staff and admin, as well as our people. So the message is not as clear because the audience is not uniform. So by being able to get the partnership together, which we're doing later on this year, in various locations around the UK, and being able to get some committed time with them where we celebrate the community of the partnership, where we encourage the learning from one another, where we have fun together, and where we recognize outstanding achievement, done a little bit more locally so people can really learn from one another, as against it being a few people on a stage broadcasting to X thousand people at an O2 arena, where it becomes very impersonal very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about, I suppose, shifting what and how, not saying, right, we're not going to do any more events or we're not going to get people together, because the power of getting partners and advisors together, they learn a lot from one another. They share experiences with one another. They're fantastically good at helping and supporting one another. And all of that is great because it helps clients at the end of the day. So absolutely looking to invest heavily in terms of supporting these refreshed, renewed type of activities. And when you have done the same type of event year after year after year, makes it very difficult to keep those ideas fresh and those kind of events fresh. So doing something different, we'll run them over the course of the next few months, and then we'll see. And if based on the feedback, we'll make tweaks and we'll make adjustments, etc., so that ultimately we get events that work for the advisors, ultimately great for clients, and create that real sense of community, which SJP is so well known for.
But I guess in the past, there has been kind of a bit of excess maybe about some of the events that SJP has held. I mean, I think obviously quite a few celebrities go to the O2 event, and obviously there's a partner event in Glen Eagles. I mean, have you tried to move away from some of the excess of previous years?
I think whenever you've got an event that's run as long as it has, like those events at the O2, there's always a risk of continuing to try and do the next thing. And the next thing then becomes just bigger and bolder. And you got to wonder whether you're actually getting a return for that type of investment that you're making. So I think when I came, an opportunity to do something quite different. And therefore, I think we're going to look to do these more local meetings in a very, 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 very different way. And I think that'll be the exciting element of how we go forward. What was in the past was in the past. I wasn't at any of those events.
Mm. And in terms of what you've done so far, Mark, obviously you've achieved a huge amount in terms of the changes that have been happening in the last 18 months. And you're talking about these pillars and the reputation, the fees, the culture. Have there been any challenges or anything kind of holding you back achieving your plans so far? Because coming from the outside to lead a big business like this isn't easy, isn't it? Particularly when it's been, it's kind of had a previous tradition of doing things.
There are a lot of very long-standing relationships, and the great thing is the quality and depth of our senior team is such that those relationships have been able to continue, and that continuity of understanding and working together has continued, and that will continue to be very, very important. I think having to change and or update systems for the simple comparable charging, that's a big complex piece. Dealing with the ongoing servicing, historic evidencing review, that's a big piece. That takes up a lot of capacity that would otherwise be used to be able to talk about and to be able to do things around our passive offerings that we want to run with later on this year. Doing more around the high net worth earlier, being able to do more around cash offerings, for example. So the things that we have in the strategy as part of the phase two, absent some of these other things, we might have been able to do it all as one phase. But what I don't want to do is do these things in a half-hearted fashion. When we do them, we'll do them really well, we'll execute superbly, and hopefully leave clients and advisors feeling really excited by some of the new tools, the new kits that they're going to have, streamlining their world, extending the product portfolio, and actually all with an end goal of exciting and thrilling the client. Mm-hmm.
And on the ongoing advice, the redress exercise, obviously this was one of the biggest things on your intro when you joined the business. You know, it did see the business take a fairly sizable share price hit when it was announced last February. But since then, the share price is up. It's more than recovered. And I think I looked today and it was up over a third since you joined in December 23. What do you think has been behind the recovery in the share price?
I think the fact that the relationship between advisor and clients is so resilient, and the strength of the relationship with SJP and the partnership so strong, and great investment performance, all of that I think has helped to produce a very, very strong set of numbers last year. I think this stage last year, a lot of people were looking, thinking, is SJP going to be around? And I'm delighted that the business has done so well and demonstrated to those naysayers, those people who were very, very pessimistic about the business, just how well the business has done, just how resilient those relationships are, and therefore just what a formidable competitor St. James's Place is in the industry, and how we're looking to try and grow and open up the market for new clients to come in, because at this stage of immaturity in the market as a whole, with 8% only receiving advice, this isn't about market share. This is about growing the market for everyone. So our advertising is not just about St. James's Place. It's also about how important invaluable advice is through a life journey and how important it is for people to get advice to help them through those stages of their life.
I think it was in Q2 of last year, you had a weak flows figure that was quite down. And at that point, a lot of people were kind of saying, is this the future? You know, are you only going to be doing, you know, it was like a couple hundred million of net flows that quarter, whereas normally it's, you know, a billion plus.
So as we saw, as was reported very recently, our Q1 2025 results, very strong gross flows of over 5 billion, net flows pleasantly surprising the market, you know, 1.7 billion. So very, very strong performance. And our partners, advisors, their teams, when I speak to the teams around the country at the moment, they are busier than they've ever been. They're working really hard. They're connecting with clients. For a lot of our advisors, over half their new business comes in through word of mouth referrals. And that's the stickiest, highest quality business that you can possibly get. And that only comes when you've got somebody who has a trusted relationship and they're willing to put their friendship with somebody on the line by recommending this advisor, etc. And that's why the business has grown so well in such a sticky fashion. That's why the client retention levels are so high as well.
So the business last year wasn't a dark place at one point, but it's been the strength of the advisor-client relationship that's rescued it.
The business had a lot of challenges last year. The business has done exceptionally well to ride that storm. it has demonstrated, I think, to many, many players just how resilient the business is, how strong it is, the quality of the advisors, the quality of the relationship the advisors have, the quality of the investment management team, how well they've done in terms of relative outperformance. So all of those ingredients together, I think, came together really well last year to be able to demonstrate that actually St. James's Place is the home of advice.
Because I guess with the redress program for ongoing services, there was obviously the provision that was set aside, but then also I guess there was perhaps some fears that the program would damage relationships and cause some clients to think about moving elsewhere. But I guess the results have shown that hasn't really happened.
So what we've seen throughout 2024 was advisor numbers growing, mm-hmm. and client numbers continuing to grow. So last year we broke through 1 million clients. We're in touching distance of 5,000 advisors. And notwithstanding some of the negative publicity, those numbers continue to grow during the course of last year. So people are attracted to the quality, and we will deal with the historic evidencing review. We're thrilled to have a system in place that we've had for the last few years that gives us great oversight of what everybody's doing at the moment.
Salesforce.
So that kind of tells us actually that this is very much an historic issue as against a current issue. So we're delighted that we've put parameters around it. We're also very pleased that the regulator has finalized their review at the end of February, and everybody can now move on and really focus in terms of what they need to do, which is grow the industry, get more professionals into the industry, and get more people engaging with advice. Because I worry about how little people know about how much they truly need to be able to survive with a, you know, kind of when they retire. And they're going to be retired a long time.
And aging populations.
Aging population is a big thing. So I said to my middle son the other day, who's about to turn 17, you know, think about what you want to do when you finish school. Don't rush into your first job because you're going to be working a long time. So by the time he retires, I reckon people will be working until their 70s. And that's a very different ballgame. You've got to pace yourself. You're going to have different careers in that period. It's not going to be one job. It's not going to be one employer. It's going to be people doing different things. And the strain on the state and the strain on the youth today to be able to provide for the state with the employed versus the retired ratio, that's going to require a new contract between society and government, I think, around the world.
Something I had to ask you about was the fee changes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this has been a huge news story for you guys, and my colleague Dan Grote has done quite a lot of very good reporting about what this is going to mean for clients in pounds and pence. I guess with anything like this, there's always kind of questions about the impact on advisors and how they're going to respond to this. Have there been any concerns that some advisors might move out of the partnership because of the changes?
We're taking 18 plus months to be able to do this project. So a lot of IT work that's required. What that's done is it's given the advisors time to get to grips with the change. They've all done extensive training, support, accreditation in terms of the new fee structure, so familiarity, etc. So the advisors have really embraced this. They've run to this. They've understood what it means. Key thing, I think, is that it's going to help us open a lot of the market that might have been weary by virtue of what competitors might have been saying about St. James's Place or just a fee model that was different from the rest of the market. So having a simple, comparable charging structure means that it's going to be very easy for people to compare and contrast.
Levels the playing field.
And it also means that when we announce and produce our investment performance, we'll be able to take off just the fund fees rather than today we have to take off all the fees. So we start the year with a headwind of, you know, sometimes over 100 bips, which will be gone in the new environment. So I think from a market perspective, it'll open things up. It'll enable people, all of us, to focus on the value of advice rather than just the cost. Because mm-hmm. again, from the research we've done and other providers have done, actually what clients and consumers are looking for is the value, is the longevity of relationship, is a trusted relationship, somebody makes them feel safe. Then they look at the element of investment performance, and then the fees are quite far down. And if you only look at the investment performance and the fees, you're missing out all this component. And that's what I've been, you know, talking to press, regulators, government about. This is very valuable. It's very tangible to clients. We should never lose sight of that, because consumer duty needs to look at this element, not just the numerical, what was the investment, how much did you pay for it? That's only a part of the equation.
And you're happy with how advisors have responded?
So I'm really pleased with the way advisors have engaged with this, really connected into this. We have spent thousands of hours supporting, working with advisors, spent lots of time themselves planning, preparing, etc. So there's a phenomenal amount of work that has been done to help support and prepare everybody for when we click over to the new world. Mm.
And something else I wanted to ask you about was a line in your results recently, or it was in an analyst presentation where you talked about productivity and in the context of seeing a marginal decline in advisors in the first half of 25. Just wondered if you could expand upon what you meant by that.
So we have been growing advisor numbers for many years, and we will continue to recruit a lot of advisors. The Academy is a great opportunity to be able to bring really, really high caliber folk in, and we will continue with lateral hires, experienced hires along the way.
From outside the business.
From outside the business. In addition to those components, for the first time in a long time, we will actually be having a real hard look at the productivity of our partnership. And we know that there's a small cohort for which productivity has been waning over the last few years. So we're going to be sitting down, and we are sitting down, working with them to provide them extra support, extra consulting input to try and lift their productivity, help them be more efficient, more effective in terms of what it is they do.
Winning new clients and getting new business.
Element of winning new clients, elements in terms of being back out in the market, marketing. For some, it may be an element of they're great advisors. They love spending time with their clients, but running a business is not their thing. So one of the things that can suit them well is actually joining an existing multi-advisor firm within St. James's Place. So we think that may be another hope. And then there may be some for whom actually the amount of time and effort that's required to, you know, really get back in the game, because these people are professionals. And to be a professional, you've got to spend a lot of time investing in terms of understanding what's happening in the market, understanding all the rules and regs and how those are changing. And if you can't commit that level of time, then question whether you're really looking after your clients in the right way or really putting yourself up in the best possible way. And for some people, we may be exiting, we may be exploring if they're, you know, an alternative career for them.
Could you say how many, kind of what kind
at this stage? No, because it's quite early on. We're not long into the process. Hmm.
And in your recent results, you also talked about high net worth proposition and an opportunity here. Can you say what the plans are and what you're changing to try and address this client segment?
So high net worth, we're defining as between 2 and 10 investable wealth sterling.
And 2 and 10 million.
2 and 10 million. And we believe that that's a market at the moment where we are underweight. So about 9% of our FUM is in that segment, and the market has about 14%. In the high net worth. So we think there's a lot more that we could do to engage in that space. So over the course of the back end of this year, next year, we'll be drawing up plans for exactly what we're going to do. We'll be recruiting people in to help build out our offering and capability around that area so that we can support our partners and advisors who currently operate in that segment to be able to lift the quality of service we give them and clients. And also in parallel, we're looking at the range of products that we provide to see whether that range needs to be slightly broader to be able to cope with a different risk appetite that people in that with that financial wealth might be willing to explore, whether it's around the alts or a few other things that we are at this stage exploring on paper, conceptually, what those might be like, with the view as part of the second wave of the strategy to be able to roll out and implement.
So maybe like private market funds.
So there may be something around the alt space. I spent a little bit of time with, when Larry Fink was in town last week, a little bit of time talking to him about what they're doing around infra. And I think there's a lot more that we might be able to do around infra in time.
Yeah. With BlackRock?
Across the market. Likewise with private credit, because there's that market has gone so big so quickly, and there's really, really high quality assets within that portfolio. So these are some of the things that we are going to look at and that we're going to explore.
And if we look at your technology stack you've inherited, because this plays a big part in the service that, you know, high net worth clients or affluent clients receive. You've obviously got a partnership with SS&C to do the platform trading for the funds administration. And then you've got Salesforce, your CRM system you've mentioned earlier. Is there any improvements in the tech stack you'd like to develop? Any new vendors or any new services you'd like to see?
So what we are doing is the 1st of June, we have a new chief technology officer landing. And it'll be the first time that we've had a dedicated chief technology officer. So when Lynn lands, it's an opportunity for her to see what we have. One of the areas we know at the moment where we could do more is around how we sweat our data. We have good quality data, but we don't use it adequately. There's more we could do to help advisors, partners engaging with their clients think about things and upon a propensity. To be able to say to them, other clients in your situation generally do X, Y, Z. And what's the trigger event that might make that conversation more relevant? Technology these days should be able to provide a list to partners, say, of your clients, these four clients should be able to be interested in having a conversation around this topic. And this is your probability of having a meaningful conversation with them. And this is the order you should talk to them in. So the kit evolves in the workplace today. It's an element of how we put it together, how we sweat the capability, how we bring in more data scientists, etc., in terms of what we're doing. So a key part of all of that cost reduction we're doing over the course of the next few years, that £250 million that we're looking to reinvest back in the business, one of those key areas of growth is going to be around how we use our kit better, smarter, how we use AI more effectively. Mm-hmm. We're using it at the moment, but at a fairly limited basis. There's more we could do. But I don't ever see AI replacing humans. I see AI working alongside, supporting the advisors and their teams in terms of what they do. Already we have kit that transcribes conversations to make it more efficient.
Yeah.
There are ways to be able to do it such that actually it'll prompt the advisor, items 3 and 5 on the agenda you haven't really covered in depth, you need to cover these before you conclude the meeting. So some of that technology again is there, that needs to be done more of, and how we can get some very at the moment, processes that might take teams hours to do should be able to be done in minutes. So all of that is about how do we make the advisor-client engagement as productive and valuable for both as possible.
Mm. So your 5,000 advisors are not going to be, their jobs aren't going to be at risk.
No, and I look forward there to being a lot more than 5,000 in due course, being able to connect with a lot more than 1 million clients using kit in a very clever way.
Mm. And something you mentioned earlier was the cost reduction program that was obviously announced last year, the £500 million piece of work. Obviously, this has resulted in some non-advisor redundancies, or there was a program announced earlier this year. Has this had any impact, or will this have any impact on advisors and clients in terms of the head office reduction?
So, as you say, we announced the cost reduction exercise last year. Elements of it are going to be how we eliminate duplication.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is due to how we structure ourselves so we can become more efficient. Part of it is undoubtedly going to be how we engage with our suppliers in a more commercial way. And part of it is unfortunately going to have a headcount implication. All of that, I think, is to try and make us more efficient in terms of how we operate. So with elements of the technology, with elements of focusing on the things that clients really value, advisors really value, their teams really value, doing those things, stopping reports that might have been generated first 15 years ago, but people still get, work still gets done to produce them, but people don't really use these days. So we're really looking at demand management as well. We're looking at how we streamline everything we do so that we become a lot more efficient. So creating new ways of operating across the business. ultimately to be able to, with the view to improving client and partnership experiences.
And Mark, a challenge facing all advice firms, all IFAs, not just St. James's Place, is succession planning and how aging advisors, you know, the average age is 58, and how does aging advisors pass on their client banks and their businesses to younger advisors out there? Within SJP, obviously, you have a loan program which facilitates this. And in recent years, you've also bought equity in some practices along the way. Just wondering if you could give us a kind of overview of the succession planning market in SJP and how it operates today.
So there were probably two key things I had underestimated about St. James's Place when I came in. One was the academy, and the other one is the succession planning. We've been doing succession planning for our advisors for 20 plus years, and it has evolved throughout that 20 something years, and it will evolve for the next 20 something years. Year to date, this year, we've done over 100 such transactions already.
Loan-based transactions.
Loan-related transactions. And there was a great example. Last year, there was one of our partners who wished to retire. He had lost his partner to cancer a couple of years ago. He was unwell, so he wished to retire. He sold his business to four advisors he had brought in over the course of the last, you know, kind of 5-10 years. Mm. So they're well established. They know the clients well. And earlier this year, he retired, and he's loving life now in terms of the arts, as is his wont. And the advisors have taken over the business, are doing a great job, and we provided the financing to support all of that. Ultimately, that's great for the clients because they don't move around shop. Their portfolio is intact and protected, and there's somebody who they've known for quite some time who probably has a good 20 plus years on this individual taking over, and therefore to be able to provide them with some meaningful longevity in terms of their relationship. So I think that the lending, the support, the engagement to the advisors and partners will continue to be something that is incredibly important. The loan-to-value ratios are incredibly good. We understand these businesses. We oversee these businesses. And it's about working with highly entrepreneurial professionals. Our partners and advisors are very entrepreneurial, very professional, and they want to grow. They want to build their businesses. So it's very exciting to, as they grow their business, to know that in time, there are different routes that they can sell all or part of their business over time. They can bring younger folk in, work with them, develop them, and then sell the business to them. That's, you know, for big businesses, that's an ideal succession route. For smaller practices, it's easier for somebody to buy up that practice in its entirety. So there are different routes. We don't mandate one route or t'other, but it's great for the advisors and partners to know that that is there. And that is a very live, healthy system that we are evolving and we will continue to evolve.
And are there any challenges with that? Because obviously we've seen interest rates go up. So the interest that advisors
pay. I think the time when it was probably the most challenging was probably 2+ years ago when rates went up so quickly and markets were kind of where they were and rates went up. So you had a cost base that increased significantly and the fee income hadn't necessarily changed. What you've seen is rates come down a bit, but you've seen FUMs since that time increase by 20+%. So the margin for the advisors has got significantly larger. So the time of maximum pain was probably, you know, 24+ months ago.
But loan to value rates, have they improved?
But loan to value rates are kind of in the, you know, in aggregate kind of in the mid 20s. So they are incredibly strong.
And has demand come down at all, or is it still strong for...
There is an element of, I think, while rates were very high, there was a degree of demand slowing down, while people thinking, actually, do I want to expose myself to a lot of additional debt at this stage? Mm-hmm. Do I ride it down? You know, until rates come down, and we're all expecting rates to come down. And then as rates come down, some of that demand, I think, will kick back in. But as I said already this year, having done over 100 transactions, demonstrates a marketplace that's healthy.
Now, Mark, finally, I mean, you alluded to it at the start, but you have a St. James's Place advisor then?
I do.
Tell us about this.
St. James's Place advisor, I have Gary. He's worked with me for a number of years from when I was a partner at Deloitte. he had been very well connected with Deloitte, told me things about the pension and the cash flow planning for a Deloitte pension scheme better than I knew it. So he really understood the future. He really understood elements and was able to demonstrate projections and cash flows. So it's great that he's around. It's great that also he's able to connect with my other advisors to make sure that everything is joined up in terms of my arrangements, etc. And also a huge peace of mind for my wife in terms of, as I said, if Bus 23 came along, knowing that she would know who to pick up the phone to, and Gary and his team, Liz and co, would be able to help sort out because they know where everything is and how everything runs.
Well, Mark, on that note, I just want to thank you so much for coming in. It's been great to have you.
Thank you very much indeed. It's good to see you.
From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.